show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervie, and I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And today, on this hot afternoon, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. Make sure you hydrate. I was telling my kids that this morning, my 3- and 4-year-old, and it was so cute to hear them say, "What is hydrate?" And I threw some water on their heads.
That's horrible, Alan.
Carrie Kasem is here with me. Welcome, Carrie.
Hi, Alan.
How are you?
I'm good. You know, you always crack me up.
I do, don't I?
When you open the show, and then we get into serious stuff and, you know, get serious.
But we're going to get serious. Do I sound sexy?
You said your voice is a little lower.
Yes.
A little bit.
No, it's hoarse. I have an awful cough.
That's hoarse.
That's good.
Thanks.
Thanks for the sound effects.
You're welcome.
So we have a great show for us today in this really, really hot afternoon.
Yeah.
You look hot.
Oh, thanks.
No, I mean, you just look like you're hot.
Yes, so mean.
Make sure you hydrate.
Oh, it's really hot. I actually have my supplements here. Electrolytes.
I have to be careful, though, because I'm just looking at the notes. I forgot what we were doing today on our show, and I'm just looking down at the notes, and I said something that maybe I shouldn't have said. I mean, was that harassment?
Oh,
we are going to talk today a little bit later in the show about what's going on at Fox. It's crazy how one after the other are toppling on these sexual harassment claims.
That's all I can say is finally.
How do you know you're finally?
You know what? It's been done to me. And you don't say anything. Now, it wasn't a horrible, horrible thing, but it has been. And they're in different stations that I've worked in. And, you know, you don't want to lose your job. You don't want to upset people. You don't want to say, now, if it was really horrible, somebody's grabbing me or touching me, forget it. I'm going after them. But it was, you know, little things here and there that would just make you feel uncomfortable. And now, finally, people are taking it seriously. Enough is enough. Have ethics. You know, especially in the workplace. So I'm actually happy that these suits are going forward, that people are being fired, and there's some accountability.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, Patricia Glazer, who represents Jamie Horowitz, who was relieved of his duties as the head of sports programming at Fox, says that he did absolutely nothing wrong, and his termination was not warranted at all. So, I think that there's two sides to every story. We are going to hear that, both sides. We have with us in the second half hour, Meg James, who is the corporate media writer and reporter for LA Times, and she covers business of television and advertising, and she's been covering the Fox Sports Jamie Horowitz story as well. We're going to ask her about a story that broke after she wrote about Jamie Horowitz, the Charles Payne firing, and he's the guy from Making Money with Charles Payne on the Fox Business Network. So that should be interesting.
Yes.
And you, I know, Carrie, will have a lot to say. And you also, I think, have a lot to say about what we're going to talk about right now, because what we're going to talk about is really interesting. Your father, of course, was very famous.
Yes.
Casey Kasem. And this past week, Olivia de Havilland, who is an Academy Award winner, of course, one of the screen legends of our time and the time.
There it goes.
I didn't hit the cough button. It just snuck up on me. And, you know, screen legend. She's 101 years old. It's amazing. What an amazing woman.
Yes.
And she was one of the leading movie stars during the golden age of classical Hollywood. She has sued FX and Ryan Murphy Productions for inaccurately portraying her and using her likeness without permission in the series, the television series Feud, Betty and Joan. And we're going to talk to Suzelle Smith, who is her attorney on this case. Before we talk to Suzelle, did you have these kind of experiences that you got frustrated about, where someone may have talked about you or your father in bad light, where they didn't get permission, or whether they portrayed you or your father in a very false and wrong perspective?
For the last 4 years, I've been harassed by somebody who has done that to me over and over and over again, stating things that were untruth. I've kept my mouth shut. I think we talked about it for a minute, but I actually got a restraining order on this person because it went from verbal harassment and written harassment all over social media to actual death threats. And I got a restraining order on this person.
That's not exactly what we're talking about.
No. She's saying I would say things.
But we want to talk about that was in the on a television show.
This was
or in
on
the
television show and radio.
Which television show?
When she went on TV. Well, this was in Germany, but out here it was radio, and it was in Boston radio, and she did a couple other shows. So, anyways, when somebody is saying you've said something, it really like makes you upset, and you can't do anything about it. I went to the police, and you can't do anything about it. They can talk about you. So, my father, same thing. I've heard, Casey did this or Casey did that. It's like that's not true. And that's not what he said. But those weren't his actions.
Didn't Casey have an impeccable reputation, honesty, integrity?
Yes.
I mean, I know you're going to. So. I would be surprised if you said, well, no, actually, Alan, let me really tell you the truth about my father, Casey. He was a real jerk. You wouldn't say that. So I imagine that you would answer the question.
I mean, he was an incredible, incredible man. And everyone who worked with him and his friends and the family will tell you he was just a kind, gentle man. I would always say he reminded me of Gandhi and Yoda. And I had his security guard, one of his security people said, so funny. I would always tell him, you remind me of Gandhi, Casey. And that's what he did. He was a very quiet, loving, peaceful man.
And, you know, it's a good transition and segue to the story of Olivia de Havilland, because she did and does have the reputation of being a gentle person, not into gossip and not into putting people in bad light.
Right.
And on Feud, the claim is that that's exactly what they did. They showed her as someone who she really isn't. And I think we really need to get to the heart of this with Suzelle Smith. Suzelle Smith is with Howarth and Smith in Los Angeles. She has been selected as one of the top 10 litigators in the United States by National Law Journal. She's been named as one of the top 50 women litigators, California super lawyers. She's been a super lawyer for many years. As I'm also a California super lawyer.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, I am. Suzelle, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Good to be with you.
What an introduction for you. So now you have a lot of pressure put forth, and you need to tell us why, in this situation with Olivia de Havilland, why did this occur, and how are you going to pursue this lawsuit against FX and Ryan Murphy Productions?
So you have to start first with California law that applies to what's called a right of publicity. So there's a right of privacy and there's a right of publicity, and both were violated by FX and Ryan Murphy Productions in the case of Olivia de Havilland. But the right of publicity says that under California law and the state law of many other states is very similar, that you may not use a person's name or likeness for your own commercial advantage without the consent of that person. There are two categories. One category is people who are alive, as of course Olivia de Havilland is, and then there are people who are deceased, and the rights of the living are, the law protects them much more vigorously than people who are dead, whose heirs are concerned or upset about the misuse of the deceased person's name, image, or identity. But California law, both common law and the statute, is very clear that you can't do that. And there's absolutely no question that FX and Ryan Murphy Productions used her name and likeness without her consent to their own commercial advantage.
One thing that really bothered me is that Ryan Murphy came out and said, we didn't want to bother her or upset her with asking her if it was okay. Are you kidding me? I mean, it was such a crazy statement to make. It made him sound so guilty.
And interestingly, Suzelle, before you answer that, he said that prior to the lawsuit being filed, and I think all attorneys would say, why are you speaking out? I think it was to the Hollywood Reporter, because, you know, Carrie jumped on that, and I would as well, and I'm sure you have as well, and everyone who's looking at this case, it's like, why didn't you keep your mouth shut? Because is that an admission that he didn't follow the law?
Well, it just underlines what Olivia de Havilland says, that she did not give her consent to the use of her name or image. And you're right, before the lawsuit was filed, when Ryan Murphy was being interviewed on the publication, you know, the marketing and advertising that they did for the show, I think that was part of it. Somebody, you know, I guess the Hollywood Reporter, quite logically said, well, gee, you know, Olivia de Havilland's alive. You know, did you talk to her? Did you ask her? And, you know, he comes back and says, no, I respected her so much. And that, you know, Casey, I completely agree. Carrie, I completely agree with you. When I heard that, when I read that, I thought, okay, so I'm going to use your member of the profession. You're a professional. I'm going to use your likeness, image, and name without your consent, but I respect you so much that I'm not going to call you up or contact your people and see if that's okay with you.
It makes no sense. And what did, yes, she's 101, but was he thinking, well, she's old, she's not going to see this anyway, it's not going to matter. The disrespect that elderly get in this country is absurd.
Well, I'm not so sure it's about disrespect, because what he actually said, it was out of respect,
no,
not disrespect.
No, no, no.
But that's what he said.
But he's being disrespectful. Oh, no. I love that I can talk now. He has a coughing fit. So,
But the issue here is when he said that he didn't feel comfortable asking her whether this happened or that happened, you know, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Obviously, if she's going to be painted in a bad light or her rights are going to be violated, it probably would behoove you to ask those hard questions or easy questions, depending on how you look on it.
But I'm thinking, Alan, that he didn't, because, oh, she's just old. Honestly,
Suzelle,
she's 101. She's probably in a nursing home and won't even know what's going on.
Except the problem with that theory, Carrie, is that on Olivia de Havilland's 100th birthday, which was a year ago in July, there was all kinds of press about her birthday party, and she gave she did give interviews, and there were lots of articles about her, and so it would surprise me if you thought that she was in a nursing home somewhere rather than living in Paris. So
right.
I think the importance to me of what he said was he didn't even try. I think that was a spin on why he didn't try. He was trying to give a reason for the obvious question, why didn't you contact Mr. Havilland, the only significant character who's still alive, the only
right.
one from the time who really did know what was going on, and of course what she said, why didn't you contact her? And I think that was just an attempt to give an explanation, but to me, obviously, it doesn't fly.
Well, you know, Suzelle, and we are talking to Suzelle Smith, who is Olivia de Havilland's attorney in this lawsuit against FX and Ryan Murphy Productions. If Ryan Murphy Productions, FX, if they claim that everything that occurred on Feud was true and that they can back it up with any kind of an evidence, which I'm not sure they can at this point because there's not a lot of people who are living who could verify it, but would that be a defense that could defeat Olivia's claim?
So the truth is always a defense. And one of the things, after reading literally dozens and dozens of cases about other celebrities in different circumstances who've sued under these statutes, the cases are very, very fact specific. You have to look at each different scenario. So there's a famous, Clint Eastwood sued the National Enquirer a bunch of times, and he won all of his cases for different things that the National Enquirer had done. Like, for example, claiming that they had an interview with Clint Eastwood, which never happened. And there's a striking parallel to that and the feud scenes with Olivia de Havilland, because Catherine Zeta-Jones is in a mock interview setting at the 1978 Academy Awards, where Olivia de Havilland was and did give a presentation. It's set up to make it look like it's real. And so the interviewer is asking the Olivia de Havilland character all these things about Bette Davis and Joan Crawford, which the Olivia de Havilland character is speaking to in unflattering terms. So it really does, you know, it's very close to the Clint Eastwood situation, where Clint Eastwood said, I was damaged because they used my name and my identity, and I would never give an interview to the National Enquirer of that type. And he won, and he got damages, and I think punitive damages and everything else. So there's good precedent for it. And I think in this case, that if Olivia de Havilland loses this case, there is no right. There really is no right to publicity. I mean, they used her name, they used her identity, they didn't get her consent, they did it for her commercial, for their commercial advantage, and they put false statements in her mouth.
And importantly, she is claiming that these, like the fake interview, never happened, would not have happened because of who she is. She wouldn't have spoken that way. She wouldn't have gossiped. So it does impact her reputation. Now, Robert Rourke of the New York Post actually said that, Suzelle, who you should really be suing is Catherine Zeta-Jones for an awful portrayal of Olivia de Havilland. And said he actually said that it was stilted line reading and there was no personality. So if anything, she really butchered who Olivia de Havilland is and the personality and the grace that she's known for. Does that go into any of this here and just saying, wow, it was just really bad acting?
No, not really. I mean, Catherine Zeta-Jones was hired to play a role and read a script. And the violation of the statute here is in the use of the name and identity without permission or consent, and putting false words into another person's mouth, which she never said, and putting her in a context which never happened. And it is an important context for, as you just said, Alan, the reputation of Olivia de Havilland is a very specific one that was developed over 80 years of being a professional. And she does use restraint, and she didn't put herself into this kind of gossipy, backbiting settings to get her own publicity or get her name in the paper. And so in the specific case of Olivia de Havilland, this makes it all the more insulting and all the more damaging to her, given the nature of her particular reputation.
Suzelle, we have to take a quick break, and we want to talk to you for a couple more minutes after the break. We have a couple more questions. I know Carrie's itching to ask something, so if you can hang with us for just a couple more minutes.
I'll hold.
Thanks, we appreciate that. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Debbie needed a plumber. The first one she called showed up late and pretended to fix her problem. But the problem returned a few days later. So she called the Smell Good Plumbers at Mike Diamond.
That's when she met Edgar, who Debbie refers in her letter as, quote, new best friend and personal plumber.
Debbie says Edgar was outstanding in every way. He smiled, fixed her plumbing, and left her house cleaner than it was before. And afterwards, he sent her a thank you card. Debbie continues by saying she didn't know there were still people out there who took pride in their work. She says the Smell-Good Plumbers have set the bar so high that no other service company can compare.
Thanks, Debbie. Our goal is to make a painful experience as pleasant as possible, and we're thrilled to have done that for you.
You can read Debbie's letter and many more on the testimonials page at MikeDiamond.com.
I'm Mike Diamond, and I guarantee my plumbers will show up on time and smell good, or your house call is free.
Call 1-800-446-MIKE. Contact your license number 399-170.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yes, we're back. I'm Alan Gervie. And why are you laughing, Carrie?
Because you asked. I'm not going to say the word, but there's a word you can absolutely say on radio. In fact, when I was doing music radio, Meredith, I can't think of her name, did a song with the B word, and we had to say it. We didn't say, here's B-word. The song B word.
And you can say that?
Yes.
Well, the reason I'm asking, actually, is because we are speaking with Suzelle Smith, and we're talking about the lawsuit, Olivia de Havilland against the FX people and Ryan Murphy Productions, and I'm sure there's no glee at Ryan Murphy Productions because of this lawsuit. Suzelle, there was an issue as well with the B word, as Carrie was just saying, talking about Olivia's sister, I think Catherine Zeta-Jones says it, and the claim that her sister, of course, is Jane Fontaine, another Academy Award winner, and again, as you said in the first segment, that's not something that Olivia de Havilland would say, or perhaps the manners that she would use.
Yes, that's right, and Olivia de Havilland was, it may have frustrated some journalists, but she was very, very restrained in her comments about her sister Joan Fontaine and their relationship. And Joan Fontaine, I think a lot of people know, did a book, I think it was called No Bed of Roses, and it was sort of a tell-all. And she was very harsh in her comments about Olivia de Havilland, very personal. And Olivia was very restrained and reluctant. I'm not saying she never said a word about Joan Fontaine, but the things she did say were always trying to take a higher ground, and she refrained from defending herself, even in the face of some pretty harsh and she felt unwarranted comments from her sister.
You know, this happened to me the last 4 years. It's been going on with somebody who's constantly saying I'm doing this or doing that, making up stories. And eventually, I ignored her. There's not one written, there's no correspondence to this woman at all. Nowhere. There's not, and we went to court. She could show nothing, so it was kind of like a stalker thing. Mm-hmm. But it's eventually, you have to stand up for yourself and say enough's enough. You got to say, okay, this is not true, and this is why. Otherwise, people start to believe it. Right. And it's not a fun thing when you're constantly defending yourself.
Well, Carrie, I think that's a very good point. When I've known Olivia de Havilland for over 20 years now, and when I saw Feud, I thought, well, gee, did Olivia, you know, agree to do this? Did they hire her as a, executive producer or something? Did she really give an interview like this? Did she say these things? And I now know the answer is no, no, no to all those questions. But it is set up in a way to make the viewer believe that this is reality. And using a living person with a reputation like Olivia de Havilland makes the whole dramatization appear as if these are things, you know, this isn't just something that, just total fiction, you know, crazy. This is something that, you know, it appears to me as a viewer was intended to strike you as something that had credibility.
And I think one of the points that you've made is that it was a business decision for them to use Olivia de Havilland in this kind of way in order to enhance the success of the series. And that leads to the damages that you're looking for. So it's simply not something about an injunction, which may be part of it as well, but also unjust enrichment and perhaps, you know, the profits, using the likeness for profit.
Right. So, Alan, if this had been done right, Ryan Murphy's people, FX people, would have sat down with Olivia's people and they would have talked about what would be fair compensation to use her name and likeness. And even, by the way, talk to her about, you know, what ideas they had, you know, how, certainly with what they were going to do, what the words they were going to put in her mouth. But she was an eyewitness to some of these events. And so they could have talked to her about that. But, you know, you guys are, you know, we're all savvy here. That is a matter for business discussions among agents, and they would have talked and they would have arrived at fair compensation for that. The statute also provides as a sort of punishment that if you do use a likeness without consent, an image identity without consent, then you can also get the profits from the show, which are attributable to the identity and name of the person that, you know, you misappropriated their,
right,
name and identity.
No, I was going to say, you don't think it's going to go that far, though, because if you're in it for the long haul, which I'm sure you are, you know, and let's hope Olivia's health holds up, and, you know, we're all big supporters, of course, but isn't it something that you would like to see settled with both sides figuring out a way to move forward?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That would be the best solution for everybody concerned. It certainly wasn't. This isn't something that Olivia de Havilland embraced and said, okay, for my 101st birthday, let me file a lawsuit.
Right, right.
You know, but she did feel, to Carrie's point, she did feel outraged, and she did feel like her rights were being trampled. And I think part of it, she thought, well, I am 101 years old, and you know what? I'm still alive. I'm still kicking. I've got rights, and I'm going to stand up for myself. I'm just not going to roll over for this.
Is this going to affect the Feud's Emmy campaign?
You know, somebody asked me that. I have no idea. I didn't even know that the Emmys thing was coming up around this time. So I don't know.
It makes you question everything that's on that show. I saw the first episode. I didn't like the whole gossipy aspect of it, the head of Hopper, I'm so done with the gossip mags and the rags. And it was just like, to me, promoting it, and I didn't like it. And these people are dead, and we don't know if this is true. I wish there was some major disclaimer at the beginning of the show stating, look, you know, yes, these characters, these names are real, but a lot of this is fiction, and we are, you know, it needs a disclaimer.
So just one point on that, Carrie, because I thought maybe one of you would ask me that question.
Not the lawyer.
you can't immunize yourself from breaking the law by having a disclaimer.
Okay.
So even if they'd had a big disclaimer, if you use somebody's likeness and image without their consent and you put false words in their mouths, you can't say, gee, you know, I'm disclaiming
Sorry
everything.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, but that's an important point to make, because we don't want to open up the floodgates for people just putting up disclaimers and then, you know, libeling the heck out of the person.
That's true.
So,
that's right.
But before we let you go, just one quick question. Where do you think this is all going to go?
Well, it has only, our lawsuit's only a week old, so we haven't had a chance to have any word back from the defendants. I do both sides, plaintiffs and defense work in cases, and so my guess is that they are having meetings with their lawyers and the lawyers who advised the series before this thing went into production, and talking about what they are dealing with and how best to handle it from their perspective. I hope that, as one of you said, that I'll get a call from somebody for FX and Ryan Murphy saying, look, could we sit down and talk about this and, you know, see if we can work it out.
Yeah.
And I think that would be out of respect as well, because Ryan Murphy has indicated that he has the utmost respect for Olivia de Havilland. So maybe that
right
would
on.
Be
Well, that would be the way to show it.
Yes.
That would be.
Absolutely.
Suzelle Smith from from Howarth and Smith. Good luck as you represent Olivia de Havilland in this lawsuit. Hopefully it'll be resolved amicably in the near future. And thanks for being on Gervie's Law.
Thanks so much.
Thanks to both of you.
Bye.
All right. Bye. That was really interesting. And she was so open about the lawsuit and where we're going with it. She talked flat out, best thing to do is resolve it, settle it.
They're going to lose this. Whether they, win or not, they're going to lose a lot of money if they continue with, again, a full-blown trial.
I don't know that Olivia and Suzelle will look that great if they're going after the profits. And I don't think this is about
money.
They
deserve them. But I look at...
Why do they deserve them?
Why?
What about the other? What about
Susan
Sarandon?
They're using her likeness. I don't know if you've ever had a campaign against you that puts you in a bad light and none of it's true. It feels horrible. Look, I mean, she deserves some money.
I'm a lawyer. That happens to me every
day. Yeah, but not all over social media and TV. So that deserves some compensation, and I do hope they get it. They don't have to go, crazy and overboard, but I do hope they compensate her properly.
Well, we will find out, and maybe we'll get an LA Times reporter writer to write about this. Oh, we have one sitting in front of us right now. Wow. That was amazing.
You segue into things?
That was like Ed Alonso pulling a rabbit out of his hat.
Oh.
Thank you. So we want to talk to Meg James now. Now, Meg James is the corporate media writer, reporter for LA Times. She covers the business of television and advertising. She wrote an article about Jamie Horowitz, who was the operative word, the head of sports programming. And she wrote he was controversial. And I think I know why she wrote he was controversial. But Jamie Horowitz was fired pretty quickly. And some would say without a whole lot of investigations and discovery, but Fox Sports took care of him fast on a sexual harassment claim. Meg, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you very much.
I'm not hearing you. Did I?
No, I hear perfectly.
You know what it was? It was my cough.
No,
it wasn't. Yeah, it prevented me from hearing you. Now I can hear. Boy, my ears are clogged up. So, Meg, let's talk about the Jamie Horowitz situation. It's a really great article. It came out July 3rd. Obviously, it's turned a lot of the media upside down because Fox has been in hot water for a little while now, going way back to Roger Ailes, Bill O'Reilly, of course, and others. And then subsequently what was the pain in the neck guy, Charlie?
What?
You got to listen to me.
Actually, it's interesting. Fox has been embroiled in sexual harassment cases almost a year to the day. It was July 6th of last year that Gretchen Carlson, sort of stepped off the cliff, as she put it, and brought a suit against Roger Ailes personally.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what kicked off this whole year of sexual harassment cases that we've been following.
But didn't she get $20 million for a settlement?
Yes, she did.
And in the which is, I know it's tough for her to do it, but she was compensated apparently, and I think they probably have deep pockets and can pay it out. What about with Jonathan Horowitz? We're not aware of any settlements that have taken place. Bill O'Reilly, we did hear about a number of women receiving settlements. Is this a witch hunt with Jordan Horowitz, or is there any evidence?
Jamie.
Jordan,
it is Jamie, yeah.
He's a baseball agent, Jordan. Go ahead.
I don't know about Jordan Horowitz's cases.
I have a disclaimer here. I don't want to get sued for Jordan Horowitz. You have not been accused of sexually harassing anyone, even though you may have. Jamie.
Oh, my God. What is that? That's horrible. We're talking about Jamie Horowitz, who has been accused of sexual harassment.
Yes. And this isn't a laughing matter, Carrie.
No. But you crack me up. Okay.
All right. So the question is this a witch hunt? That's a good question. I think that Jamie and his attorney might say so. The thing that was particularly noteworthy in this Fox Sports case is that the investigation went on just a little bit over a week, and they terminated him last Monday, which was July 3rd. He, on Friday afternoon, was told to report to work at 8 a.m. He came to work Monday morning when most people were on holiday and found out that he had lost his job. So I do know from my reporting that Fox talked to several women, producers, on-air talent, and although I can't really say or and I really don't know the full extent of what the allegations were. Fox certainly took it seriously because, as you remember in the Roger Ailes case, that he was fired about 3 weeks after the allegations first surfaced. Bill O'Reilly, it became known that Fox had been paying settlements for more than a decade.
And thanks to Lisa Bloom, that came in to the media. And Carrie doesn't like
not
that.
Not saying anything.
Yeah, because Lisa Bloom's on our show quite often. And, you know, sometimes it takes that. And I don't know if Fox gets gun-shy when it comes into the media that one of their people may be involved in sexual harassment. And then they quickly do something to stop any further ramifications.
I think what we're seeing now is that the company is laser-focused on this, whereas they weren't before. You have a situation where Rupert Murdoch is now 86. He's trusting his two younger sons, who are both in their 40s, to run the company. And they certainly want to project an air that, you know, this is a new age, this is a new environment. And the collection of Rupert's friends, who sometimes got away with stuff, or so we were told, are not finding the similar sort of environment that existed a few years ago.
Good. And thank God. You know, this man, Jamie Horowitz, wasn't he fired from the Today Show after 2 months of creating discord and upset there? You always find these social personalities, let me say antisocial personalities, that create discord. Now, I don't know him personally, but what I'm reading, it looks like he's one of those guys who gets fired from places because of whatever he's creating. I don't know him. This is my opinion only. But I've seen people like that go from job to job, creating upset, destroying a work environment, whether it's sexual harassment or just creating upset with the talent. And it makes the entire workplace a hostile, horrible environment to work in. And it just looks like he may be leaving a trail like that.
Well, the Today Show example was interesting. There were no allegations of sexual harassment at Today, but as you point out, he was there about 2.5 months. And NBC, you know, put out a statement at the time that they fired him in November 2014 saying it just wasn't the right fit. But several of the talent, not just women, but several of the talent on air, Willie Geist, I think it was Tamron Hall at the time, Nellie Morales, they were all What's going on here?
You can't, when somebody like, you know, whether it was a gossip or whatever, you're going to be fired, to work under that, thinking you're going to be fired any day, or to come to work like that. I mean, it is so stressful. It is unbelievable. And that you're putting a lot of, it's almost like under duress, and it's not a great way to work and not a great way to live. I know it's happened to me before with certain individuals that I had to work under. So I'm just glad that this guy's getting called out. And
well, you've got to be careful about that because, you know, Patricia Glazer, who's representing Jamie, said the way Jamie has been treated by Fox is appalling. At no point in his tenure was there any mention by his superiors or human resources of any misconduct, nor any inability to adhere to professional conduct. Jamie was hired by Fox to do a job that until today he performed in an exemplary fashion. Any slanderous accusations on the contrary will be vigorously defended. And we contacted Dan Petrocelli, who is of O'Melveny and Myers. He wrote us back, and he wouldn't come on, but he gave us a statement that Jamie Horowitz is no longer with Fox Sports, effective immediately. There is no further comment at this time. So you have two sides to this story.
Definitely, and I expect this one will play out over the months, or maybe there'll be a quiet settlement.
And I'm always willing to say that there is another side, because there is. There always is. And whether it's as bad as we think it is now, it might not be. It may not be. Some of the accusations may come out, and like, well, that really didn't deserve a firing. So
right.
I am open to that. Absolutely.
Well, after the break, we're going to talk to Alex Roniker, who is of Katz, Marshall & Banks. He's an employment lawyer. We're going to bring her into this conversation so we can talk about what the legal implications are for Jamie Horowitz, not Jordan, and Charles Payne. You're listening to Gervie's Law. We'll be right back.
Weeds love your garden. They hide near flowers knowing you can't touch them. Now you can, with Roundup Weed and Grass Killer with SureShot Wand from the Home Depot. A special buy at just $19.97. The protective shield means pinpoint accuracy, so you can target weeds without harming surrounding plants. With Roundup in hand, weeds are in trouble. Roundup Weed and Grass Killer with SureShot Wand, just $19.97, now at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Valid through August 2nd while supplies last, U.S. only.
This is John Greenhut. And if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. Even better, there's no messy strips or trays that you have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-679-0969. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Staples knows that behind every honor roll student is an honor roll mom. The kind who doesn't get schooled when back to school shopping. The kind who always has her kids' backs and their new backpacks. The kind of mom who knows she'll get great prices on everything she needs for back to school at Staples. And right now, Staples 1-inch standard view binders are just $1.92. Moms who know get everything they need for less at Staples. Staples, it's pro time. While supplies last, ends 9/2/17.
It's Macy's One Day Sale Saturday. Save on amazing deals of the day. Apparel, shoes, and accessories for her. 30 to 60% off. Men's suits, dress shirts, and summer essentials. 50 to 65% off. Select fine jewelry. 50 to 75% off. Kitchen electric, cookware, dinnerware, and more. 50% off. And summer's best bed and bath trends. 60% off. Earn plenty points during Macy's One Day Sale. Plenty. Lots of points. Lots of places. One rewards program. Savings on regular and surface. Exclusions apply.
Listening to Gervey's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, we're back. That's some pretty powerful music. Speaking of power, we were talking off the air about why people, and we'll say men and women, feel that they can harass and, abuse employees. And I'll tell you that in this environment, especially at Fox, where so much has gone on over the last year, how people can have that kind of arrogance. And I was saying, as an employer, as a boss, I stay so clear of any of this. And I have a lot of men and women working for me. Maybe I sound like a jerk, but I don't even talk about personal stuff. I mean, we're all business. And, I just don't even want to go there. Why aren't these people, Meg, on more red alert? Because it can really cost a company a lot of bad publicity and profits.
It's a key question. It really is.
And maybe this is a good time to bring Alexis on. Alexis Roniker is an employment attorney. She's with Katz, Marshall & Banks, and she's a rising star, 2017 rising star. She's been helping employees with employer violation of rights in her fairly short career, but very illustrious. Alexis, welcome to Gervey's Law.
Thank you so much.
It's great to have you. I want to talk a little bit about the Charles Payne. We have Meg James here, who's an LA Times reporter, and we've been talking. I know you've been listening in. We've been talking about the Jamie Horowitz situation. And then we have a situation with Charles Payne, who is, he's done the show Making Money with Charles Payne. He's been there since 2007, Fox Business Network. Married guy. He has an affair with a married political analyst. And then they end the relationship, and apparently that political analyst doesn't come back on the show, and there's a Charles Payne gets fired. Now, this woman is not an employee. How is this employment law, and how does this figure into a potential lawsuit?
Well, based upon the information we have, taking it, this information that we have, The reason it creates a hostile work environment, which is, you know, what's at issue in all of these Fox cases, is because if you're requiring perks and, or, you know, subjecting people to retaliation such as blackballing in exchange for, you know, sexual favors or requiring them, even if the person that that's happening to is not an employee, even under federal law, if other women see that happening and they know that the only way they're going to get ahead is by similarly succumbing to that quid pro quo, which is, you know, doing, you know, providing a benefit for a favor, then they're also going to be placed in a hostile work environment. And under some, so under federal law, sexual harassment is handled under what we call Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And that covers only employers. But, for example, under the New York Human Rights Law, which a lot of these Fox, the Fox News cases were brought under, they actually, in certain circumstances, cover independent contractors, which is why some of the plaintiffs, for example, Julie and I, Roginski, she was an independent contractor, but she was covered by that law because it's different than the federal law. So, you know, the law is different throughout the United States, but it's critical to know that if you're creating an environment of, you know, if you don't succumb to my sexual overtures, you're going to be blackballed and fired, that becomes known, and that can be a basis of a hostile work environment for more than just the woman being subjected to that.
Let me ask you this, though. When you have an affair with somebody, when two people have, you know, started an affair, consented, right. They've both consented, they're having this affair. If I had an affair with somebody, right, and we're both consensual, and I had a show, I wouldn't want them back on my show either, especially my husband would be like, why are you putting this man on your show? You know, you carried on an illicit affair. What are you doing? So I think it's a bit different when you have a consensual affair to when you have somebody where you're saying, look, if you give me some sexual favors, I'll put you on the show. So I think, isn't that different?
I mean, not necessarily. So if there is first off, consent and welcomeness are two different legal concepts. You don't have to be sexually assaulted or forced to have, you know, to be sexually harassed. If you know that your job depends on or your opportunities depend on succumbing to this relationship and you didn't want it, but that's the only way that you could maintain this opportunity, then that you made consent in the fact that you weren't forced into the sexual liaison physically, but you are not welcoming it. And welcomeness is what's relevant under the law. But in the situation that, you know, two people are attracted to each other, they have a relationship, both welcome it, but it goes sour. And if the response of the person in power is to say, well, I'm now blackballing you, that is not legal. That moves from a paramour situation to a retaliation situation.
But how do you figure out what is what, really? I mean, because if somebody is, you know, somebody broke up with someone, they're going to say, oh, he did this because of this, this, and this. You don't know who to believe at that point. You don't know what to believe. But if it was consensual and the affair went on for a while, you can better believe that it was probably consensual and they were probably, you know, they probably both wanted it, right?
Well, I don't know. If you look at, for example, what happened with Roger Ailes, there was a woman, you know, who they settled, I think that it was
$20 million
by some reports. Okay. No, another woman who was settled $9 billion, it was like $9 million. Maybe. Anyhow, she was subjected to years of quid pro quo, and she knew that the only way she was going to get opportunities through Fox News and Roger Ailes was to succumb to his advances. Now, are you saying because it happened for years and he required that for years that it was consensual and welcome? No, I mean, sometimes when you're in an environment, for example, in entertainment or on the flip side, if you're a very disempowered person, such as an immigrant, you're in a position where you know that the powers that be are going, you know, you either have the choice of going with what's being required of you, whether it's legal or not, and getting ahead or leaving the industry. And so women will, you know, sometimes go along with it with no other choice. And I should say men, too, because right. It's not just one gender. I certainly have represented men who have been sexually harassed.
And that's
true. I'm not
going
to let go, but I don't want to let women off that easy because you got to take some accountability. And there are women that will turn and do that to men. I'm sorry, but there are. I've seen it. So, for the most part.
I have to say I represent a lot of people, and I say people, men and women, who have been sexually harassed on the job. And I represent them from a workers' compensation angle and the injuries, the psychiatric and the emotional effects of some of these situations. They've ruined people's lives. And I kind of agree with Alexis is that there are situations that occur, and a lot of times you want to say, oh, the woman was being stupid, but maybe she wasn't. It's part of a job. Someone, you really like the job, you consent.
There's a difference between stupid and vindictive, and there's a difference between being a victim and then victimizing
you
somebody.
You sound like you're talking from personal experience.
I am. So well, listen, I mean, there's...
Let me say this. I'm not saying, you know, we live in a complicated world, and I'm not saying that there's never been a situation where, you know, someone uses a consensual, welcomed relationship later. But what I will say is if the spurned paramour, as we say in the law, uses his or her, but generally his power dynamic with the person who's refusing him, then that's not legal. You know, if a relationship ends and you were, you know, what I would say is foolish enough to have a relationship in the workplace.
I said stupid, you said foolish.
then you need to figure out how to act like an adult and not act like a teenager who's had their feelings hurt. Right. You need to not blackball someone. You need
sometimes that isn't the reality of the human condition. And I hate to be such a bleeding heart here, but I see people, young women who come in, and yeah, they get into a bad situation, and they're just not capable of being as mature as they should be, and it affects them, and the effects on them cause them a lot of emotional damage, and that's where I go to court and win the case. I want to...
Oh, and let me be clear. I'm saying that the harasser needs to be the adult and not act like a teenager.
Okay. I thought you were saying the opposite. Meg, I want to get you in here without coughing, hopefully. And, you know, you've been doing this reporting. I want to know the sources. I want you to tell me whether there actually is in the Jamie Horowitz case, and I know one of your colleagues wrote an article on Charles Payne. How do you get the evidence in these situations? I'm not asking you to disclose, of course, your sources.
Thank you. Yeah.
But in terms of actually getting evidence, because Alexis is making some good points, but it has to be based, and I think this is Carrie's point as well, on evidence.
Well, that's true. And how do we get the sources to write these stories? I mean, we talk to a lot of people and a lot of people talk to us, and we have to corroborate the information before we put it in the LA Times. We have a very high standard of what, you know, goes into the paper. I think in the case of the Charles Payne one, he is still at Fox. He's being suspended right now as the law firm that Fox brought on to investigate the Roger Ailes allegations and then the Bill O'Reilly allegations is looking into this situation. It's unclear from I think most perspectives, you know, what the outcome of this one will be. It has been, you know, alleged that it was a 3-year consensual relationship, that after the relationship wound down, then this woman was not, you know, invited back on the show. And you have this whole situation where I think all of these cases speak to is that do women feel like they have to sleep with these talk show hosts to get on TV or on, you know, the radio?
Wait a second. Why are you looking at me when you say that? Do women feel like they have to sleep with talk show hosts to get on the radio?
I'm a happily married guy.
But I'll tell you, you know, Alexis, she makes a good point. But where do you draw the line? We only have a minute. I'll give you the last word here. With the evidence, how do we know whether someone's being truthful or not? And, you know, Meg's writing a story about it, and it may not be based on what we really need, which is good evidence.
Well, I mean, the place you get evidence is in court also. So, you know, or, you know, in a arbitration for some people. But, you know, you need victims who will come forward and witnesses, and it's a very hard thing for people to do. But it's critical in these cases because when it's just one woman who's saying what's happened to her, I can tell you how many times an employer says, he said, she said. And what you end up needing is a group of brave people who will get involved. And not just, like I said, not just the women who or men that are being harassed, but also their coworkers who see it happen and who don't have a dog in the fight. And that's when it's a mass, that's when you change.
I have to say that it does bring everyone their consciousness. It really makes you think, and I think these are important points that we have to consider in the employer-employee relationship, and hopefully this program today made people think, because they don't want to be in the Fox situation. Meg James, thanks for being with us. We appreciate all your commentary, and we'll look to you for further information as these issues unfold.